You're tuned in to WKCR-FM New York. This is 89.9 FM on your radio dial and also on the World Wide Web at WKCR.org, where you can listen to us live 24/7 anywhere in the world via live web stream. You're tuned in to Sounds of China, and we're with you every Saturday morning from 10 a.m. till noon. We bring to you the whole variety of Chinese music, both traditional as well as more contemporary music. Last week, we had presented to you one installment of what we call non-Chinese musicians of Chinese music. And we had in studio, we were very lucky to have in studio with us three singers from the New York Chinatown area. And they demonstrated for us their art, and they were very gracious and sharing with us their views and knowledge. This week, we will be presenting to you the second installment of this series, and we had in studio with us about a week ago a musician by the name of Gary Lucas. Gary Lucas is a guitarist based in New York, Grammy-nominated soundtrack composer of film and television, and has published over a dozen albums all over the world, mostly in blues, jazz, and psychedelic rock. But Gary has always had an interest in Chinese music, particularly film music, songs from the 1920s jazz era, Shanghai jazz era. And some years ago, Gary put together an album by the name of The Edge of Heaven, in which he interprets many of these Shanghai jazz pop tunes on the guitar. I have the album with me. Gary visited the station, spoke to us about his interest, his work in this area of music, and we will listen to his words and music and demonstrations on this morning's program. So without further ado, let's tune to a few of the tracks from his album, The Edge of Heaven. We will listen to mainly his interpretations of two inspirations, singers by the name of Zhou Xuan and Bai Guang. These two singers, songstresses, are two of the seven great songstresses from the Shanghai pop tune era. They were also famous movie stars, singers, and inspired multiple generations of Chinese vocalists. And in this album, Gary interprets some of their songs on his instrument. He begins with Old Dreams, a track by the name of Old Dreams, which was originally performed by Bai Guang, followed by Please Allow Me to Look at You Again, which was performed originally by Zhou Xuan, but in this album sung by the vocalist Celeste Chong. Then we will listen to an instrumental called The Mad World, which was originally sung by Zhou Xuan. And then we will turn to a track by the name of The Wall, which was sung by a singer by the name of Gisberg in this album, but originally by Bai Guang. And we will listen to a fifth track, If I'm Without You, which is an instrumental on the album, but was originally sung by Zhou Xuan. If you're interested in learning more about Gary Lucas, you may visit his website by searching Gary Lucas. And the album is published under Knitting Factory Records, for those of you who are interested. You're tuned in to Sounds of China here in WKCR-FM New York. The time now is 10:08, and here is Gary Lucas.
Thank you.
We just heard five tracks from Gary Lucas's album, The Edge of Heaven, in which the guitarist Gary Lucas interprets mid-century Chinese pop on the guitar. We heard Old Dreams, followed by Please Allow Me to Look at You Again, and then a song by the name of The Mad World, and then The Wall, and the last song we heard, the last track we heard, If I'm Without You. Again, these songs come from The Edge of Heaven. That's the name of the album. And in the songs, you can hear some of the finger-picking blues that Gary injects into the Chinese music. And we will learn more about that as we move on during today's program. Up next, we have a few period tracks that I want to just put out there for the listeners so that we have some kind of perspective on what music we're dealing with here this morning. So up next, I'll play a couple of tracks, not by Zhou Xuan or Bai Guang, but actually by a few other songstresses from the same period, from the same genre, to give kind of contrast or kind of a means for comparison for listeners. We'll listen to a singer by the name of Bai Hong, and she'll be singing a song called Rosebush, followed by Farewell Sha Sha, and then we will turn to a second singer by the name of Wo Yingying, who will sing the song of Nightingale. And so we'll listen to these tracks and see the kind of music that Gary is trying to adapt to the guitar, to the blues almost. These three tracks come from an album called Shanghai Gorgeous Lady, which was released on the CRC label. That stands for Chinese Recording Company, and so this was put out in China. So up next, Bai Hong and Wo Yingying.
Can we
three period tracks, first by Bai Hong, called Rosebush, followed by Farewell Sha Sha, and the last song by Wo Ying Ying, called The Song of Nightingale. These were period tracks that I presented to you to give some kind of orientation to how we can listen to Gary Lucas's arrangements of this genre of music. And we will now turn to one more track from Gary Lucas's album before we listen to an interview that he did here at KCR when he came more than a week ago and explained this music to us, explained the history, explained the music theory as well. And so up next we will listen to a song by the name of Night in Shanghai, called performed originally by Zhou Xuan, and then we will jump straight into the interview with Gary Lucas here in WKCR. You can call us up at 212-854-9920. That's 212-854-9920 if you have any questions, or you can write to us at soc@columbia.edu. That's SOC, which stands for Sounds of China, at columbia.edu. So Gary, welcome to the station. So tell us a little bit about what this music is.
To me, what it is the most beautiful expression of a true fusion music that I've ever heard. It really is incredibly soulful melding of traditional Chinese forms with Western swing music, Tin Pan Alley music, Broadway, jazz tunes, and what I really love about it is that it's a quite a backwater of music not very well known or heard in the West, but beloved of Chinese people all over the world to this day, who recognize this and the singers. So in a way, why I love it so much is that I feel I'm, you know, doing my part here to spread the word about a great, overlooked, beautiful genre of music.
Uh-huh. And how did you first come in contact with this music?
Well, it's an interesting story, but in 1975, I found myself working in Taipei, Taiwan, for my uncle and my dad. I was involved in their family business kind of peripherally, and what I was really doing was, you know, hanging out in the clubs and making music with like-minded friends that I made, both Chinese musicians and some other American and foreign, you know, there was a Swedish kid I used to jam with a lot, and French musicians. I came into contact with the whole panoply of international musicians there. And I eventually fell in love with a Chinese woman, and we were living together, and she played me tapes of this music on cassette. She had them in her collection, and in fact, she knew this music. She grew up with the music. And I was quite struck by the sound when I first heard it. I'd never heard anything like it, and I thought that it was simply, you know, some of the most beautiful music I'd ever heard.
And what was the status of the music at the time when you first came across, and what is the status of it now?
Ah, okay. Well, I would say, you know, the status of it as far as the Chinese community is concerned is that it was music. It had a certain musty quality to it because it wasn't current to the scene, and yet, you know, pretty much any age group Chinese that I met in the U.S. and I'd mentioned these singers to, they knew about it, uh-huh. and many of them loved it, you know, because it was something they'd heard at some point in their lives. So it was in the culture, let's say it was in the blood. Mm. But, you know, I think at this time that we're talking about, you know, maybe it was like a little bit before there was a comeback of sorts, and the comeback was primarily, you know, on a few fronts, not just my record coming out in 2001, but the usage of a lot of music in contemporary Chinese cinema, such as Wong Kar-wai's In the Mood for Love had some tracks, I believe, of Zhou Xuan's in the music, and also Shanghai Triad, Zhang Yimou's film with Gong Li, has, you know, Gong Li's acting as a nightclub hostess in pre-war Shanghai, uh-huh. and singing some of these songs. There were also reissues, and there were attempts made to put the music with contemporary beats. I know there's an album called Shanghai Divas that came out on EMI in the Far East with an English producer, Ian Widgery, where he took the original tracks and somehow made beats laid onto the music. And, you know, all of this, I think, really helped popularize it again. And so, you know, today I would say it's certainly recognized by more people, not just Chinese people, all over the world. You know, it's like out there in the world.
That is true. Lately, especially in the past maybe 20 years, a lot of Chinese movies, especially Hong Kong-type movies, have come out, and it seems like they refer back to the era of, so Shanghai,
right.
Mobsters in gangs and sure. with the
well, I'd say, you know, it's an appealing image in a romantic kind of view. I mean, old Shanghai. I mean, I certainly, being a denizen of New York City, for instance, for at least now 34 years I've been living here, I know that when I first saw pictures of Shanghai before the war with this incredible visual display of neon signs, and, you know, I was taken by how cosmopolitan a scene it seemed to be. Also seeing films from that era, such as Street Angel, or The Angel on the Street from 1937, which is the first film that featured Jo Schwinn when she was a young girl. There's a montage at the beginning of that film, almost an avant-garde montage, a retinal assault, I would say, which is, you know, the street signs of Shanghai in a rapid succession, looking like Times Square, you know, let's say in the 40s, I mean, just in the great Wei Wei era. This all fed into, you know, my appreciation and romantic impulse of, you know, what big city living was about, and, you know, it's a key into the jazz age as we know it.
I mean, yeah, we have New gangster York. Movies here. And
yeah,
New York,
all
Hollywood.
Right, so, needs. I mean, you know, I'm all for it. Actually, been there, although I'm going. So,
Tell us a little bit about that.
Current
projects.
The Holland Festival has asked me to mount a production based on this album, The Edge of Heaven, in Amsterdam.
For listeners, that's the album that we'll be listening to.
Right. It's something that touched a resonance, you know, in a lot of people's hearts when it first came out in 2001. And so they've asked me to go to Shanghai in August for purposes of finding local Shanghainese singers and auditioning them to bring to sing these songs in the production, which is scheduled to premiere in Amsterdam in June of 2011. So this is great for me because I've dreamed of going to China, and I'm trying to arrange some concerts right now to play there while I'm there, and particularly to see Shanghai as it exists today. I know it's a far, far, far different scene, obviously, than old Shanghai, but you know, I'm really thrilled and excited about taking that journey.
Parts of Shanghai do remain, so I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm told. The Bund, right?
The Bund is still there, and I'm sure.
You know, it's funny, but when I first moved to New York, my Chinese wife and I found a series of stereopticon cards with images of old Shanghai in an antique store here in the West Village. And I have a stereopticon viewer that I inherited from my dad. So to see images in, you know, this 3D, this is like a primitive 3D stereopticon viewer. It's how to describe it. If you know ViewMaster viewers, which were very popular in America, it's like a version of this. It's where you see a twin image and your eye sort of makes a one 3D image out of it. Same principle as Avatar, really. But in black and white. Anyway, this really got me. My juice is flowing, you know, to see these images. I have books and, you know, have read books about the period of old Shanghai. So I'm quite excited about this.
That's excellent. And tell us about how you put the album together, The Edge of Heaven.
Okay, that's an interesting story. What happened really is I always loved this music. When I moved to New York, I tried to play it. You know, I did play it for, you know, many, many friends who'd come over to visit. Just like, oh, I have to play this. You know, this is something I love to listen to, and you probably haven't heard this. And, you know, I turned many people on to the original recordings. And one of those people actually was Captain Beefheart, a.k.a. Don Van Vliet, who your listeners may not know, but was an incredibly influential avant rock visionary under whose tutelage I sat for a spell for about 4 or 5 years playing with Beefheart in his magic band. The full title of the band is Captain Beefheart and the Magic Band. And he loved Chinese cultural artifacts, I have to say. And when I played him this music, he was quite taken with it as well. And in fact, when we performed the last time in New York City, was a big show at the Beacon Theater here on Upper Broadway. I believe the Beacon still exists, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they haven't torn that one down yet. we started the show by playing some of Joshua's music over the PA to warm up the crowd. You know, uh-huh. He just loved it so much. We used to listen to it, actually, in the van when we were on tour.
How did the crowd take it?
They seem to like it, although it's hard to tell. You know, people are always up getting, you know, Coca-Cola or whatever. Okay. I don't know. So, but it seemed to just add to the proceedings very nicely. And anyway, it was just something that was around that, you know, I loved and I loved to share with people. And then what really spurred me into doing adaptations of the music came about because a very close friend of mine, Ken Hurwitz, who's a lawyer for Human Rights Now organization, he planned to marry his Chinese sweetheart, Mi Ling Cui, who is a producer of films. In fact, she was a producer on the PBS series, The Chinese Experience in America. Right?
Oh, yes.
You know that series, yeah. In fact, they used some of my music in that series, yeah, from this record. Thank you, Mi Ling. They planned to marry in Chinatown in the mid-90s. And they were bringing Mi Ling's family in from Hong Kong, and it was, you know, a big deal. So they came to me and said, listen, in lieu of a material gift for our wedding, would you be so kind as to perform two or three of these songs at the wedding?
That's good.
And I was happy to comply. And this mandate from Mi Ling spurred me into figuring out how to play this music on guitar and to arrange it, and I did do three of these songs in a big banquet hall in Chinatown.
Okay.
And it was very well received, not just by the family, but I can tell you Lee Rinaldo and his wife Leah Singer were in the crowd, and they, you know, Lee is in Sonic Youth, he liked it, they gave it a big thumbs up. So, you know, I felt reinforced that I, you know, accomplished something there. And the next step was I started playing them in concert in Europe. I was touring a lot solo, and still am, in Europe, and they went down very well at the shows. And then I put two of the songs on my record, Evangeline, which was a solo acoustic album, which came out in 1996 on Paradigm Records here. And it's available, by the way, on iTunes. I have a dozen of my catalog records in the iTunes store. It's probably on Rhapsody, anyway, as well. So if you want to hear the proto versions of these songs, there they are. And anyway, I then met a Chinese record label owner here in New York City who was more into dance music.
A Chinese record
label. He's Chinese and he owns a record label. I'm sorry if I, you know.
But he's not, he doesn't produce Chinese music.
No, although, okay. But the story is this. He liked these songs, and I did an EP for him called Gary Lucas at Paradiso, okay. Recorded live at the Paradiso in Holland. This is also on iTunes, by the way. And on that record was a version of The Edge of Heaven, Songstress on the Edge of Heaven. Mm-hmm. Which is one of my favorite tunes, sung by Zhou Xuan in the film Street Angel. And his father, I think, you know, who was maybe bankrolling the label, said, this is great, why don't you commission a whole record of this music from Gary? Mm-hmm. So he proposed that, and I said, okay, great. You know, and I got to work. A couple of years later, I was done after assembling, I think, a dozen songs and different singers, and some of them feature my then lineup of my band Gods and Monsters. I've had a long time band based in New York, Gods and Monsters. And I turned it in, and unfortunately they were going through a financial crisis at the time, so it didn't look like the record was going to be issued. I was just sitting on it. I then started working a lot in France. This is at around 2000. The year 2000, and I did a show at the Hotel du Nord, which is a very famous old hotel in Paris, also the title of a great film for you cineasts out there. And some months after performing the solo acoustic show, I was approached on email by a French label who said, we really loved your show and we'd like to sign you as an artist. We'd like to have a meeting. I met with Pierre Walfish, who was the A&R director, And he said, "Do you have a project for us?" And I said, "Ah, I think I do. I have this Chinese record." And he was intrigued, so I sent him the tapes. And then we arranged to get the material released by the other label that had commissioned it, since they weren't going to put it out. And I made a deal with this label, which is in France, called Label Bleu. Very good, sadly defunct label that specialized in mainly world music and jazz. And it came out in September, right around September 11th, 2001. I was in Paris, actually, on 9/11, promoting their record. And it received amazing reviews across the board, not just in France, but wherever it was heard. And, you know, it spread to other territories. And eventually secured a release as an import in the United States. And if you go to my website, there's a whole page about this record. I think the link is www.garylucas.com/EPK, Electronic Press Kit, just EPK. You'll see a whole page about The Edge of Heaven with reviews and excerpts from the record. We received fantastic press in China, in fact. Mm-hmm. There were positive reviews in Hong Kong and Macau, in magazines and newspapers, and in Taiwan. There was a huge feature article interview with me about this. And so eventually, you know, I was profiled in the Wall Street Journal for doing the record. There was a feature on NPR. I was interviewed and played live. And, you know, let's put it this way, the record had legs, as they say. And now it's come full circle because, sadly, after Label Bleu went under a few years ago, I got the rights back, and now it's just been reissued here in America on the Knitting Factory label. It's being distributed by Sony Red, and I've added a couple of bonus tracks to the original package, which is quite beautiful, I have to tell you.
So you have been incubating this...
Oh yeah,
for quite some time.
Listen, it's a long time coming, and you know I'm very proud of this record. I'm determined to keep it in the world and available for you know interested folks. Especially because I have to say, I think by actual numbers of records sold, it may be my most successful album to date. Huh. It sold well over 10,000 units, which I can tell you may not sound like a huge amount, but for an indie release of what let us say, you know, is, in all fairness, a relatively obscure genre, you know, which is a Chinese pop music of the 1930s.
And who
those
are
really good numbers.
Who are the people who purchase?
You know...
Or could you not tell?
Who are the people? You know, I couldn't tell you except that. For I know me. That when I have done shows, fans will come up and say, I love that record. I mean, you know, all over the world. So it just got out there, you know... It's like water seeks its own level. I don't know, right. You know, whose hands it got into. I think these are the one common denominator that may unite all these folks is they have a penchant for romantic music. This is probably my most lush and romantic record. It probably has also the slowest tempos I've ever put on a record. I deliberately restrained my normal impulse to speed through the pieces and you know, concentrated on making a very user-friendly product sonically. People who know my other work know that it spans just about every genre known to man and woman.
That is
and has partaken of.
And now, you're going, you know, to genres overseas.
Yeah, well, I'm very much, you know, omnivorous, you know, interested in all sorts of music. I just love music. You know, I respect music worldwide. I don't think that there is a genre of music that I've ever encountered that I didn't find some element of beauty within it. There's really nothing I can't stand or find something of value. And so I'm very ecumenical in my tastes, very Catholic tastes. So.
Well, we will see some of the slow tempo and
I might speed it up just because I'm here live. You know, this is a tendency, but I'll try and keep restrain myself.
We'll see some of the interpretations and Gary's style next here in WKCR. That was a portion of the interview with Gary Lucas here at WKCR, recorded over a week ago. Gary also played a couple of tunes here for us when he visited. In particular, the track that I'll be playing for you next is called If I'm Without You, but we have already listened to that track from the studio album. But this one that he plays, the recording that he did with us when he came, is much longer, involves improvisations, and quite frankly sounds a lot different from what we have already heard earlier this morning. So I'm going to play that for you up next. If I'm Without You by Gary Lucas, recorded at WKCR. heard two tracks. The first one, called If I'm Without You, recorded here at KCR, followed by a second instrumental called Where Is My Home, originally sung by Joe Schwinn. Up next, we will listen to the rest of Gary Lucas's album, The Edge of Heaven. That's the name of the album, The Edge of Heaven, recorded on the Knitting Factory label. We will listen to I Wait for Your Return, which is sung by the singer Gisberg and originally sung by Bai Guang, followed by Pretense, an instrumental originally sung by Bai Guang. A third track called The Moon in the Street, originally sung by Zhou Xuan and in this album sung by Gisberg, followed by two tracks, The Wall, an instrumental, and then a last track, Please Allow Me to Look at You Again. So five more songs by Gary Lucas from the album The Edge of Heaven.
Thank you.
heard five tracks by Gary Lucas from the album The Edge of Heaven. Up next, we will return to the interview that I did with Gary when he came more than a week ago, and this time he'll talk about the other elements that went into the music and also a little bit more about his background and his evolution as a person, as a musician with this music. We're back with Gary Lucas here at WKCR. So, Gary, tell us a little bit about what the forces that created this music in that era.
What I can tell about it is that basically Shanghai was a magnet for European refugees fleeing from communism, fascism, Nazism. Many of them Jewish musicians, klezmer and otherwise. And they were able to get into Shanghai as it was a free port. You didn't need a passport to go in and out. And many of these Jewish musicians found work in the recording studios. And I would say for sure they had an influence on the creation of this particular music, down to arrangements and playing in the orchestras on it. And so this, you know, has a resonance with me because I grew up a Reform Jew in a middle-class family in Syracuse, New York, and I was exposed to so much music at a young age. This is one thing that would account for my love of all sorts of music. And one particular genre that I loved the best was the blues. I know I took guitar lessons for a month, courtesy of my dad. When I was nine, he suggested it, and I said, gee, Dad, well, that's a good idea. I mean, I was clueless, and this is before the Beatles came out even. So playing the guitar wasn't quite the popular pastime.
Oh, really?
That became. Yeah, weird. It was getting there because of the folk boom, but still, uh-huh. You know, it wasn't something that, you know, a lot of kids today with Guitar Hero games and
right.
Everything, they're just so immersed in the guitar culture. Back then, you know, it was like getting popular.
Yeah,
anyway, it was my dad's idea, and I just thought, that's a good idea. So the first thing that I heard that really like grabbed me was my guitar teacher of a month played a run that had a blue progression like in it with flat a third and just bent the string a little bit. And I was like, wow, oh, I want to hear more of that. See, I was an early rocker. I liked folk music, but I loved also listening to Top 40 radio of the day growing up. So I absorbed all of these influences, like the sound of Philadelphia at the time and R&B records that they would allow over the airwaves in my community. And then, of course, when the British invasion started, you know, the Beatles and the Stones and everything that followed, I just ate it up. And the blues really took a hold on me, so much so that eventually when I joined Captain Beefheart, one of the things that really sucked me into that music was that he was taking a very prominent blues patina and then twisting it and, you know, adding other elements to it of a free jazz nature, but the bedrock of it was the blues. And to me, to this day, I'd say that although I like all sorts of music, one of the things that unites the music I love the best and respect the most is this element of the blues. And what is that? You know, it's a universal feeling and a universal language, but basically it's the sound of a human struggling.
Exactly.
Can be ecstatic blues, it could be, you know, there's all shades. Like Miles Davis had this tune, All Blues.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, I think this is something that borders on, you know, the spiritual. It is spiritual to me.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, blues.
I'm sorry, what?
The blues, in my understanding, is all it's not despair, you know? It's not the same as, say, depression. It's that, but with some optimism.
It's taking the despair, maybe transmogrifying it into an optimistic shout of defiance. I think even, you know, really sad blues is like a sort of scream into the void. It's like a protest unto God, let us say, for the believers out there. Isaac Bashevis Singer, my favorite writer of all time, Polish-Jewish writer. I'm of Polish-Jewish ancestry on my mother's side. He said he was under protest to God, right? And you know, he was a believer, but you know, it's that's right. You know, I would subscribe to that. We're sort of protesting, you know, the unfairness of you know, being born into the hand that is dealt one in the world, and you know, some them that's got shall get, them that's not shall get. Anyway, I think that it's a very healthy expression because, you know, it's a way of turning sorrow into positive energy. You know, to some people it may sound as whine, as much as, you know, there's just people whining and complaining. No, there's a spiritual holy sound to it. And, you know, I've thought a lot about it. What is it? What makes it up? Well, to me, the actual bending of notes, which in the vocal terminology would be, you know, vocalese effects of a glissando nature. Also on, you know, stringed instruments, also on, you know, brass instruments. Anything that would slur a note and bend it by microtones, you know, in and around the first note that was played, that produces this effect. And what, you know, it's like a voice. It's a voice wailing, like on a guitar, right? If I would just strike a note here, and then by bending the string, it's almost mimicking the ululation of a human voice, of a singer.
It's know, that, that change in the note.
Yeah, like the change in the note spirit produces the magic to my ears.
Yeah.
You know, because it really suddenly produces the sound of a human, you know, wailing in ecstasy or grief or whatever, you know, in triumph and defiance. It's that utterance of the human. And in that, I find the most spiritual kind of refuge. You know, most of the music I like have these elements. I find it just incredibly satisfying. But this is my, you know, nervous system. Other people have other,
I mean, tongue notes,
the criteria for what, for, you know, the, yeah, they go for, so.
I mean, spiritual music. I know you're also involved with, you've worked with Indian music.
Oh, I've worked with this fantastic Indian singer, Najma Akhtar, who has a beautiful, angelic voice. And she really can produce amazing glissando effects with her voice in a style known as ghazal.
Yeah.
You know, also Jeff Buckley, one of my heroes, you know, who worked with me in Gods and Monsters. I co-wrote two of his best-known songs, Grace and Mojo Pin. Jeff loved Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan, and he loved his father, Tim Buckley. And both of these were amazing singers who could do all sorts of effects with their voices that were just, you know, would transport me into the Blue Empyrean. You know, they really just will send a listener receptive, you know, with an open ear.
Right. Slides.
Yeah.
That's what Indian classical music...
There you go, slides. But Chinese music, too. Listen, Japanese gagaku music, they do stuff, you know, with the voice and with, you know, stringed instruments like the pipa, which is a beautiful-sounding Chinese traditional instrument. Bending these strings and, you know, incanting and chanting. I mean, they're just... It's just holy music to me. And I hear affinities in things like Celtic music, you know, Irish music, Scottish music, Jewish music. The wailing of a cantor is, you know, very similar to me, to a muezzin, actually, of, you know, Hindu, sorry, and Muslim music. You know, there's affinities throughout the world. We're talking about the tuning of the world here.
Yeah.
I use open tunings a lot in my playing. Now, I derive them from my work with Beefheart, who was going back to country blues. People like Robert Johnson and Skip James would tune their guitars to open chords. And in this way, you get resonance and droning strings based on the root note, tonic note of the key that the song is in. And, you know, this kind of playing in modes, as it's technically known, is very similar to what goes on in Chinese music, which has a five-note scale, pentatonic scale, very similar to the blues, which also utilizes a similar scale. When you hear John Coltrane and Miles Davis play in a certain period around the time of Kind of Blue, They were working very much in modes in jazz. It was an innovation at the time. A lot of the music I like is fixated with the mode of the day. So this is the approach I took to arrange these songs. Now, a lot of the original songs of Joshua and Baglan have chromatic movements and key shifts. They're very elaborated on in a sort of Tin Pan Alley way. I took the ones that were more or less fixed in one key, not because they were easier to play, but just because when you're working with open tunings, you can't really do key changes into like disparate keys so easily and pull it off. So I, did my best to keep the original spirit of the songs and actually play them in the actual keys that they were recorded in. But I'm still doing it in my style, which is very much based on American folk blues, right. Country blues.
And we heard
that's, as you can hear in my picking and playing, this is the bedrock of my tradition. And I think, the critics and the people who bought the record really thought it was pleasurable and successful because, it was sort of like a bridge from one kind of playing style into another world. But it showed that there was a connection there. There definitely, in my ears, is a connection to all this music. So how I constructed the arrangements
For the album Edge of
Edge of Heaven. Okay, this is how I constructed the arrangements for the album The Edge of Heaven. I did not have any scores, obviously. I mean, right. If there was sheet music ever issued, it doesn't exist, or it's not in my purview. So, like, mostly every other music I arrange, including music by Wagner and Bruckner and Dvorak and Jewish music and what have you, I did it through close listening. I got in, you know, with almost a stethoscope. You know, I mean, I really went to examine the heartbeat of these songs through extreme close listening over and over again. And first, I would work out the relative key and figure out a tuning that would best enable me to perform that song in that key. And then I went for the soul of the melodic line. And there was a lot of elaboration and ornamentation on the original tracks. The arrangements are superb. I mean, it's very jazzy.
Right.
And Tin Pan Alley-esque with lots of Rococo curlicues and flourishes. And I went for the essence of the song. To me, a good song will stand on its own, just being played on an acoustic guitar. That's my preferred mode to work in fact, these days. I have used, if you know my body of work, extensively electronics and loops and whatnot. I'm a pioneer, actually, I'd say, in this genre with guitar. But for this particular album, I stripped these songs down to the essence. And then applied my own sensibility, which is basically American folk roots, and found the melodies within. And then some of the songs on the record remained as simple, but, you know, complex to play instrumentals, which have a great integrity on their own, minus the lyrics. And then on other songs, I utilized the services of two fantastic singers. One is a star right now in Singapore on a television program named Celeste Chong. And she was coming through New York. I think she was working on a project Malcolm McLaren was trying to get going, the late Sex Pistols impresario. Malcolm McLaren, who also did solo records, such as Fans, I think was one based on, was it Madame Butterfly? I don't know. Anyway, he was trying to get something going with Chinese music. That was aborted. And Celeste knew a lot of these songs, actually, through growing up and singing them. And so I got her to sing primarily the three Joe Schwann songs on the record. Her high, lilting soprano lent itself beautifully to these songs.
But is that high, lilting soprano, is that representative of Joe Schwann?
Yeah, I would say. If you listen to the record, it's funny, but I chose two divas who represent really both light and dark ends of the spectrum of this 30s Chinese pop, to me, Joe Schwann and Bai Guang. Joe Schwann was known as the golden voice of China, and she starred in many films, the best of which, or the one that I know the best, is this Street Angel, where this is her debut. She must be about 17. She looks incredible. She's a gamin type. Figure, very pure and innocent, though she's corrupted by her family in the film. But she emerges triumphant. And, I would just sit here and whistle about it all day. And, anyway, to mute that. So there's Joe Schwann, and then the other singer is Bai Guang, who has a darker, huskier, lower contralto voice. And a journalist from Taipei, who did an article about this record when it came out in 2001, said, she was the Mae West of China. What is going on here? I'm so sorry. Right. Bobby McFerrin is visiting us in the studio. And, I'm going to turn off the cell phone now. Anyway, for Bai Guang's voicings, I found a great singer named Giesburg, who was an Austrian singer living in New York. And Giesburg knew this music. She was the first Caucasian person that I encountered, a singer, who actually had heard a lot of this music and loved it. And Giesburg studied Mandarin among other reasons to specifically be able to do a good interpretation of these songs. And anyway, she's singing most of the Bai Guang songs on the record. This is like, you know, Chinese technology.
I'm the cell phone is
my
now.
LG phone. Yeah. So, anyway, Yeah, they beautifully embodied the voices of the original singers, to my estimation here. They did a really bang-up job. And, you know, who knows, I could be working with them again, too, in the future. I've also worked with an excellent, amazing pipa virtuoso and singer named Min Xiaofen, who's from Nanjing, and her father is a famous pipa.
She's based in New York.
She's based in New York. You know, the father came from Nanjing. He taught at Nanjing University. And Min actually is more, I would say, into experimental avant-garde music.
Right.
She's recorded for Tzadik and Astroworks, and is a fantastic virtuoso of the pipa, but also has a great voice. And we've done performances where she sang both the Zhou Xuan and Bai Guang songs. She could pull off this music really well. And so there's a bonus track on the record, on this new version of The Edge of Heaven that's just come out on the Knitting Factory label, which is a live recording of Min Xiaofen and myself performing at the Quebec City Summer Festival in 2003 or 2004, I don't remember, but I can tell you we got a standing ovation performing the whole record for an hour on an outdoor stage in front of a crowd of a couple thousand people up there in Quebec. And this record actually was number one on the world charts in Toronto, in Canada, when the record came out.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Well, I've been on a few charts here and there in my day. The record I did with Najma Akhtar, I can tell you, was number four on the World Music Charts Europe, Riche Day, on World Village Harmonium Monday. I'll have to send you a copy. That's a record I'm very proud of as well. So that's the story of like how the record got made. You know, I brought in my group, who at that time consisted of Jonathan Kane on drums and Ernie Brooks on bass guitar, to embellish a couple of the songs and provide a little backing group. But there are no other performers on the record but myself, those two guys, and these two singers. I like paring things down to basics myself. And this is something that goes back to my Captain Beefheart experience. He kind of taught me inadvertently, maybe just by example, of how to create large-scale ensemble sounds using just a minimum of voicings and instruments. I don't think you need to have like an orchestra at your disposal.
Well, you're one person embodying many different people and many different influences.
Well, I try. It's like Walt Whitman said, like, do I contradict myself? I contain multitudes. You know, I'm trying to unify all those voices warring within me now into one distinct voice in my career. And I think, you know, I've succeeded insofar as if you listen to one of the 20 or so records I put out since I started doing this for a living in 1990, I've been a full-time musician since 90, you'll find a common element and thread of a blues feeling underlying all of this different music I've worked in. And
we'll be hearing more from Gary Lucas and of Gary Lucas here in WKCR.
Great.
We just listened to an interview with Gary Lucas that we recorded more than a week ago, and now we will listen to the rest of Gary's album, The Edge of Heaven. There are two bonus tracks that we haven't heard. One is called A Pair of Flowers. It's an instrumental, followed by the title track of the album, Songstress on the Edge of Heaven, by Zhou Xuan. Here they are. Thank you.
Thank you.
The two bonus tracks from Gary Lucas's The Edge of Heaven. We heard A Pair of Flowers and Songstress on the Edge of Heaven. Again, the album is The Edge of Heaven, released on Knitting Factory Records. It is still commercially available, so feel free to visit Gary's website or search for this on various commercial outlets on the internet.